A crisis is brewing in the Ukraine as Russia masses troops on its border and Western nations decide how to respond. Is World War III coming? That's what we're going to discuss today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. I'm glad you're here with me today listening to this podcast. I just want to remind people to like and subscribe to the channel and to these podcasts, wherever you might listen to them or watch them. I really appreciate that. As we continue to grow, it's good to have more people join us. And so let other people know about it by liking and subscribing to it and just letting people know about it, share it on social media. We're on social media, all your various channels. Most places, I think we're just at Crisis Mag. So feel free to follow us there. So again, what I want to talk about today is what's happening over in Ukraine. I almost accidentally said the Ukraine, which is, of course, what people erroneously call it the Ukraine. It's just Ukraine. There's no the before it, like the Ohio State University. But I want to talk about what's happening over in Ukraine and with the Russians and with the NATO and the United States. And what I want to do is I want to first give a brief overview of Ukraine and the whole situation there. Now, this is not going to be in depth. I mean, it would take hours and hours to go into really in depth into this topic, but it's going to give an overview. And honestly, it's probably going to be more in depth than you're going to get your typical CNN report or MSNBC or Wall Street Journal or anything like that. So there is that. First, I just want to say that Ukraine hasn't been a nation for very long. In its history, that area of the world has been under Russia. It's been under a Polish kingdom. And it's only in recent times, really, that it's a nation. Now, I'm going to pull up a map for those who are watching. If you're not watching, just grab a map of Europe while you're listening. And you'll see in the map that I pull up here that Ukraine is that green country kind of in the middle, the large one. And most importantly, you see how it borders Russia. It's actually a very large border with Russia right there. And of course, on the west of it is Poland and Romania and Budapest. I'm sorry, not Budapest, Hungary, Slovakia, and of course, the Western European countries. So that's basically where Ukraine is in Europe. And it, most importantly, as you can tell, it's not that far from Moscow even. It's on the border with Russia. And it's actually not that far from Moscow. So that's important to note. Now Ukraine is predominantly Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox. There's a very large contingent of Eastern Catholics there as well. In fact, if you look at the different Eastern Catholic churches, the Ukrainian Eastern Catholic Church is by far the largest of all of them. And but Ukraine itself is predominantly, it's almost all Christian. There are some Muslims and others, but it's almost all Christian. But it's predominantly Orthodox. And in fact, the Orthodox, there's a big split in the Orthodox Church that's caused by what's happening in Ukraine. Not what we're talking about here, but what happened was is that traditionally, Ukrainian Orthodox are under the authority of the Patriarch of Moscow, the Russian Patriarch. However, recently, the Patriarch of Constantinople recognized a kind of an offshoot of Ukrainian Orthodox Church and that is not under Moscow. And Moscow was not happy with that. And so now there is no communion between the Russian Orthodox Church and the Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople. So that's a whole nother story, but just showing Ukraine seems to be in the center of a lot of conflict today. So what really matters, though, for understanding Ukraine is understanding it's really it's almost like two countries. On the eastern part of Ukraine is very pro-Russian. It's natively Russian. I mean, a lot of people there speak Russian. It's very much more predominantly Orthodox than on the west. The Ukrainian Catholics predominantly on the west side of the country. On the west side of the country, then you have much more predominantly Ukrainian speaking, whereas you have a lot of Russian speaking people on the eastern side of Ukraine. You have Ukrainian, almost all Ukrainian speaking on the western side. They're also much more pro-Western. They're more anti-Russian. And so you see there's really is a divide within Ukraine itself. And if we go back to the map real quick, you can kind of see how the eastern side it goes up against Russia, and the western side is much more towards Europe. And that's almost the divide of the country right there, is that it's a country with two different aspects, two different ways it's pointing. One is towards the east, towards Russia, and one is towards the west, towards Europe. And you see this happens in a lot of the politics of Ukraine. The divide of the country plays out. And let me give a little bit of a recent history that kind of built up to where we are now. Again, this is just an overview. Obviously, I think most people would know that Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union. It was made up part of the Soviet Union. But in 1991, it declared its independence. Most of the different satellite countries of the Soviet Union, this was the time they were all declaring independence. Ukraine was one of them. And then there was a lot of, just like in most of these, in Russia itself and these other Soviet countries, it had a hard time recovering from the Soviet years. So the 1990s were rough. And there was a lot of corruption in Ukraine. And in 2004, there was what is called the Orange Revolution. And a lot of this revolution was against corruption in the government. And what happened was there was an election. The results were disputed and it was overturned. And so then a new election and a new president was elected who was very pro-Western. So again, you had this divide between the pro-Western and the pro-Russian aspects of Ukraine, and the pro-Western president essentially won. But in 2010, that president then lost an election and a more pro-Russian president was elected. And so it was actually the same guy who lost in 2004 was elected in 2010. So now we have a more pro-Russian, and this is very simplistic, I know, but essentially what we have is a more pro-Russian president in Ukraine starting in 2010. Then in January and February of 2014, so about 8 years ago, there was a coup. The president, the government was overthrown. There was a coup. And it basically, the United States helped engineer this coup. And this isn't something I'm saying that's some conspiracy theory. There are tapes of basically I'm forgetting her name. It was the woman who worked for the State Department for America who really coordinated this. And so there was a coup because, like I said, there was a more Russian-leaning president of Ukraine. And that guy was overthrown in this coup that happened in 2014 that was engineered and by the United States of America for obvious reasons, because they wanted a more anti-Russian government in Ukraine, because that was more for their interest, obviously, for the United States' interest. And at least that was their feeling. Now, remember 2014, who the vice president is. This is an Obama-Biden engineered coup, basically, that happened in 2014. And what they did was they installed a more anti-Russian president. Actually, the new government was almost literally Nazis. I mean, they had support. They supported they would look up to this guy, a Ukrainian, who supported Hitler and everything. But for the United States purposes, this is all that mattered was the fact that they were more pro-Western and more anti-Russian. And so, and actually, it's interesting because I just saw an article a day or two ago that Britain was claiming that Putin was trying to engineer a pro-Russian coup in the government in Ukraine. And the United States was saying, oh, we're taking this very seriously, which, of course, is somewhat ironic considering they engineered an anti-Russian coup just 8 years ago. And so then, so in that was 2014, January, March. Then in, I'm sorry, January, February, 2014. Then in March of 2014, the Crimea was annexed by Russia. And that's the Crimea is on the eastern side, the more pro-Russian side. In fact, a lot of the people who live there are Russian speaking, and they're not really that upset about the fact that Russia took over Crimea at that time. Now, of course, in the West, we see this as an invasion and as a terrible thing. And I'm not saying it is a good thing, but what's interesting is that Crimea does have strategic importance to Russia. They have a base there that's very important to them. It's their only warm water port that they have. And so for Putin, this was very important. So again, I'm not defending them taking over Crimea. I'm just explaining this because it's important to understand when there's talk about Putin invading all of other parts of Ukraine, whether or not that's really plausible. We can't compare it to Crimea. And so that's what happened in 2014. Then in 2015, what's interesting, the Donbas region of of Ukraine, which is the eastern part of Ukraine. So it borders with Russia. It's very pro-Russian. They actually had a referendum in 2015 in which they voted they wanted to join Russia. They actually wanted to join Russia. And you know what Putin said? He said, no, I don't want you to. And I just want you can be an independent country. You don't have to be part of Ukraine, be an independent country, but I don't want you to be part of Russia. Now, why did he do that? If he just invaded Crimea, just took over Crimea, and he wants to be in charge, he wants to expand the empire as we seem to think he does, why wouldn't he just take it over then? Because they were almost inviting him in. And what the main reason is because it didn't have strategic importance to Russia. In fact, Ukraine is an economic mess, and it has been since, I mean, it was during Soviet Union time too, but since the Soviet Union took it over, it's been an economic mess. So it's not like Russia really has a strategic reason to take this over. In fact, it would end up being a drag on their economy if Russia took this over. So they just said, no, thank you, which I'll talk about this more in a little bit, but it's one reason I don't think Putin has any plans and never had any plans to invade Ukraine, because I don't think it's in his interest. I'm not saying that Putin won't invade because he's a saint. I'm saying just because it doesn't serve his purposes. It does not advance Russia in the way that he wants to do that. So, but what happened was currently in, I believe it was last April, Russia started to move some troops to near the Ukraine border. And I remember they're still in Russia, but they were doing it near the Ukraine border. And so this started to worry people in the West. And the CIA came out with something, I think it was back in November, that said basically that they believe that Russia is planning to invade Ukraine by the end of January. And that became the talking point for everybody, which I think the one thing that really makes me question that is, why would Russia invade a country at the end of January in the middle of winter? I mean, I think history tells us you don't try to attack Russia, and Russia shouldn't try to attack somebody close by in the same climate in the middle of winter. I think they'd at least wait till spring, even if they were planning to do it. But anyway, that's what the rumor was that Russia was planning to invade, and they would do it by end of January. And now we're at the end of January. It's the 25th of January today, Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul. And so people are really excited, think it might happen very soon. Now, okay, so that's basically the very, like I said, very high level overview, but it helps us hopefully to understand a little bit of what's going on here. Now, what is it that is being said? What's Putin's problem with Ukraine? What's the problem here? A lot of it comes down to NATO. So NATO is, for those who maybe aren't as old as me and don't know exactly what NATO is, it was founded in, I think, 1949. And it's basically a coalition of, at the time, mostly Western European states, as well as United States and Canada, that was against the Warsaw Pact, which was the Soviet and the communist countries in the East. So it was a military agreement that basically, if Soviet Union attacked France, for example, all the NATO countries would come to their defense. If they attacked Italy, all the NATO countries come to their defense. If they attacked the United States, obviously, then all the NATO countries come to their defense. So it's a Cold War relic, really, is what it is. However, after the Cold War ended, when the Soviet Union disbanded, NATO continued to be. So the Warsaw Pact, which was the reason, I mean, NATO exists to oppose the Warsaw Pact. When the Warsaw Pact went away, NATO didn't. And in fact, NATO started to expand. And one of the things that's interesting is in the 1990s, NATO promised Russia that it would not expand much beyond the borders of Eastern Germany. It wouldn't continue to expand beyond that. However, that's totally happened. And so what's happening is NATO is expanding more and more to the east. I'm going to pull up another map for you, for those who are watching. And it basically shows the current NATO members. And as you can see, it goes all the way to Poland down and then down south of that. And you'll notice a big country in red. And if you were paying attention to the previous map, you'll know that's Ukraine right there. And what that is, that's a promised invitation country. And that was in 2008. Basically, NATO promised that Ukraine would one day be invited to NATO. And if you look at the map, you see how much that this is really, we're really creeping now on the border with Russia. We do see there are a few countries that border Russia now that are NATO. And yes, I'm forgetting exactly what this country's called. So I'll pull up this one. So we're looking at Estonia, Latvia, and I think Lithuania. And so they are in NATO and they're on the board. But really, I mean, I don't think anybody really cares about that because they're tiny countries, aren't going to really do much. Now we're talking about, though, NATO expanding all the way essentially to Moscow's doorstep. And needless to say, Moscow isn't very happy with that. And so we're creeping closer and closer. Now, so people are saying that one of the big reasons that Putin is considering invasion of Ukraine is as a pushback to NATO's expansion, trying to tell them, no, NATO, we don't want you to expand all the way to our doorstep. And so I actually think a lot of that is a ploy. I think Putin knows that NATO isn't going to invite Ukraine anytime soon. In fact, President Biden actually said recently that it'd be at least 10 years until Ukraine was invited into NATO. And that's basically essentially saying it's indefinite. We'll see. It may happen, may not happen. We say 10 years. I think a bigger reason, though, that Putin is nervous is because of missile launchers being installed in Poland and Romania and potentially in Ukraine. And needless to say, he's not real excited about the idea of Western missile launchers that could launch against that would be that close to Moscow, that close to Russia being installed. Now, the claim is that these missile launchers are directed towards Iran in case something happens with Iran. But I think everybody realizes that's just posturing and not really necessarily true. And so, like I said, Putin is nervous, I think, about the fact of this encroachment of the West right on the doorstep of Russia. And so he's pushing back. So I think the movement of the troops to Ukraine, to the border there, was basically a show of force that, yes, we're here. We don't really like the fact that you're coming so close to us. But I don't think I don't think he has any plans to invade. Now, history will show if I'm right or wrong. If all of a sudden he invades tomorrow or at the end of the month or something like that or soon, then I'm completely wrong on that. I just don't think he stands to gain, like I said, by invading Ukraine. I think he does stand to gain. Putin does stand to gain by basically saber rattling on the border to get the West to the negotiating table. I think that's probably a more likely scenario in that case. Now, let me give a little bit. Now, that's a lot of the background there. I want to talk a little bit about what I think is the appropriate way as an American, as a Catholic, to look at this conflict, because I'm coming from both angles. I know some of our viewers and listeners are not in America, but most of them are in the West. And so I think a lot of this applies to the Western countries like the UK or Italy or Canada or anything like that. And also as Catholics, I think most of us probably who are listening or watching are Catholic or at least conservative Christians. So I think that we have to look at this from a Catholic perspective and also from an American's perspective. First, I want to lay my cards on the table. I think people who follow me on Twitter and maybe listen to me before know that I don't really go along with the somewhat standard conservative view of American foreign policy. My own history is like I remember when I think it was in eighth grade, so this was in the mid-1980s, I remember when the plane was shot down, I think it was over Korea, and there was a real chance, we at least thought there was a real chance that there would be a nuclear war between the United States and Soviet Union. It was 1984, I think, 83, something like that. And I remember going to soccer practice that night, and our coach starts off saying, well, I got some good news and bad news. He's like, the good news is our game this weekend has been rescheduled. We're going to have it. I guess it was canceled or something like that. The bad news is we might all be dead by then. That's what it was like living in the 1980s, frankly, growing up, is like you thought there was a real chance that you could have a nuclear bomb. I was growing up in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I remember I would look at list of where we rank on cities that would be bombed. And because I think we had some some companies like GE and other places that made items for military, we were at least in the top 30, I think, or something like that. So this was really what we went through. And so I had this idea of America, good guy, Soviet Union, bad guy. And honestly, Soviet Union was a bad guy. The communists, terrible. You know, they were the bad guys. And so I supported, I remember when the first Iraq war happened in 1991, I supported it completely, just like most Americans did, definitely conservative Americans did. When we invaded Afghanistan after 9/11, I supported that. And I even supported it first with massive misgivings internally that I didn't really express publicly. I did support the second Iraq war, but really it was then that I finally broke and said, okay, this is getting ridiculous. I can't really support this anymore. I don't think there's a real reason. And I started to go back and say, why did I even support the first Iraq war? And so over time, I've become, let's just say, much, much more skeptical of American foreign policy, of the idea of American interests that need to be defended around the world, when it just seems to me that we have the most flimsy of excuses to call something of American interest. So that's my view. And also, I come to it from a Catholic view of war is only moral if it's a just war. And a just war is always the last line. It's always the last line. You try everything else before you go to war. Obviously, if you're attacked, you have a right to defend yourself. And I very much support that. So I would consider myself pretty much anti-war. But what I mean by that is I'm against most wars that are going on in modern times. I'm not against war on principle, because war can be justified in certain circumstances. I just don't think those circumstances apply in most of the cases America's involved in. And so if you look at American foreign policy over the past 50 plus years, it's neocon dominated. It's not Republican dominated or Democrat dominated. It's neocon dominated, meaning it's basically a lot of hawks who are controlling the government. For example, if Hillary Clinton had won in 2016, I think we would have been in some serious trouble from foreign policy alone, obviously for other reasons as well. But I think we would have gone to gotten involved in a significant war if Hillary Clinton had been elected. One of the things about Donald Trump that I did not vote for Trump in 2016, but one of the things I liked about him was he talked sense when it came to foreign policy. He's like, what the heck are we doing in all these places? And he was absolutely right. I don't think he followed through on a lot of that. And I think he gave into the military too much and the neocons too much during his presidency. But he was dead on right with his instinct that we need to get out of a lot of these places. We got to stop acting like everything's in American interest all over the world. And so neocons have dominated. And one thing this is where I want to challenge conservatives. I want to challenge my fellow conservatives about this issue. Look at who supports the neocon, belligerent, bellicose foreign policy of America. It's what I've called in other contexts, the woke axis, the media, the government, academia, large corporations, big tech. They all basically support American foreign policy as it is. Shouldn't that tell you something? The same people who are destroying our lives through the COVID regime, who are imposing these crazy things like the woke agenda through transgenderism and all that stuff, they also are always very supportive of American interventionism. And so I think that should, as conservatives, that should at least give us pause that, hey, hold on a second. I know there are conservatives who are very bellicose as well, the neocons. I mean, somebody like, I'm blanking on the name, that guy down in North Carolina or South Carolina, the senator. Anyway, Lindsey Graham, that's who I was thinking of. I mean, he wants to bomb everybody. I mean, if he's never met anybody he didn't want to bomb. And so I do think those conservatives, why do we believe the press and the government when they tell us something like Russia's about to invade, we need to go over there and we need to do something, when we don't believe them when they say that we have a pandemic raging that's going to kill grandma if we don't all mask up and vaccinate and things like that? Or say we have to accept that this man who says he's a woman is actually a woman. If we don't believe them in all those things, why do we believe them when they push, when they beat the war drums? I don't get that. I think we should be a lot more skeptical about what we're being told by the government, by the media, by this whole woke axis about American foreign policy. I think when all of a sudden it's released that, hey, Putin's about to invade, I think we should at least say, hold on a second, who's telling us this? What is their agenda? What are they trying to push when they tell us this? I think that's something we have to keep in mind. Also, I think we have to remember, we're not playing around when we try to have this attitude towards Russia about try to really be antagonistical towards Russia. They have nuclear bombs. They have and I think they have the second most number of nuclear weapons of anybody in the world behind us. If they're not second, they're up there. I'm pretty sure they're second though. You don't want to mess with them in the sense of trying to pick a fight. You don't pick a fight with somebody who has nuclear weapons. You try to work with them instead. This isn't say like we act like Russia is some sainted country that's great and so awesome and does no wrong. It just means it seems to me that you don't try to pick a fight with them. And that seems to be particularly since Obama. Obama and Biden, I don't know what their issue is, why they've tried to pick a fight with Russia so much. I mean, that's another thing about Donald Trump. He did not try to pick a fight with Russia. And I think that was smart of him. Why would you? In fact, I would argue that the great powers today, obviously United States is up there, the top power, but then you have China and Russia are two other great powers. Do you really want to push Russia away from Europe and towards Asia? Do you want to push them into China's arms? Do you really want a China-Russia axis against the United States, against the West? It seems to me a lot smarter to try to bring Russia into our sphere of influence, try to bring them over to our side, not like we're super allies like we would be with England or something like United Kingdom or something like that, but at least we would have a stronger relationship that they wouldn't want to go over to China and work with them. I mean, China's the real bad guy here. I mean, I talked about Soviet Union bad guy because of this atheistic communist regime. Well, what's the atheistic communist regime today? It's China. So do we really want to push Russia over into their arms? I don't think so. But I think that's where they'll go if they can't have trade agreements, they can't have commerce and everything with the West. They're going to look to China because that just makes sense on their part. So I think that's something we have to consider as well. Now, I also want to say something. This is something I'm going to get in trouble with. I'm sure people are going to call me a Russian agent or something like that. But I think as Catholics, it's very important that we're patriotic. That is a virtue. It's a virtue to love your country and to defend your country and to do things and to want to see your country succeed. That is a virtue. That being said, there's a difference between patriotism and being blind to the faults of your own country and acting like that you do no wrong, but every other country does something wrong if they go against you. I think we have to be clear as Catholics that we do not serve one country on this earth. We serve Christ the King. And so we're willing to say when our own government does things that are not right. I mean, obviously, like I said, conservatives, we fight against our country, the COVID regime, against the woke act, the woke agenda and all that stuff, against abortion, all the things our government gives us that's evil. We should also be willing to question the what our government is doing in foreign affairs as well. And so I think, for example, we should look at this, at least for the purposes of understanding it, we should look at this from Russia's point of view. This isn't to take Russia's side. It's simply just to say, hey, hold on a second. Why would they be doing these things? And I think if we look at it, let's try to do this thought experiment. Imagine that Russia had engineered an anti-American coup in Ottawa, up in Canada. And there were parts of Canada that were very pro-American, but basically they were being shunted aside, maybe over in Vancouver or something like that. But that now the leadership of Canada was basically installed by Russia. And they were starting to consider having some missiles and different weapons over in Canada and bringing them to an alliance with Russia that was basically an anti-American alliance. What do you think America would do? What do you think Americans would think about this? I know what I would think. I'd be scared to death. I would be thinking, okay, Russia is definitely our enemy. They're definitely doing these terrible things. We need to do something to defend ourselves. We need to work in Canada to basically try to get them back on our side. Well, how is that different than what Russia's doing in Ukraine? How is that fundamentally different than what Russia's, their perspective? They see this as, they know for a fact that America helped engineer a coup in 2014 to install anti-Russian leaders. They know that that NATO is creeping closer and closer to the border with Russia. They're installing missile launchers closer and closer to Russia. Why would Russia not be a little bit worried about this and think we need to do something about this? We can't just let this happen. We can't let this all of a sudden we wake up one day and we're surrounded by this. So I think it is important that we do understand Russia's perspective, not that we take their side if they're doing something wrong. We're not saying, okay, yeah, it's great that you annex Crimea. It's great that you're amassing these troops and like that. But we simply understand where they're coming from so that we get that maybe it is something that we're doing that's causing some of this. I think this is one of the things that we have a hard time doing, is particularly as conservatives. We have a hard time when it comes to foreign relations, understanding our role in the problems. We do it all the time when it comes to domestic stuff, conservatives do, but we don't do it when it comes to foreign affairs. I remember one of the great moments of modern American politics was in 2008 when during the Republican primaries, when there was a Republican primary debate and Ron Paul was there and Rudy Giuliani was there. Of course, Rudy Giuliani was running on I was the mayor of New York during 9/11. I'm going to make sure we are strong. We're going to defeat all our foreign enemies no matter what. And Ron Paul, of course, was the libertarian candidate. And at one point during the debate, Ron Paul challenged Rudy Giuliani in front of all these Republicans there. And he basically said that America had played a part in the lead up to 9/11. Now, people immediately say, oh, you're blaming America for 9/11. It was the Muslims. It was Osama bin Laden, whatever that. That's not what Ron Paul was doing. It was simply saying is we need to look and say, okay, we got attacked at 9/11. What led up to that? Was it just a bunch of crazy people who said, let's fly planes into the World Trade Center? No, there were reasons they had. Now, I'm not saying, obviously, it doesn't justify it. Nobody's justifying flying planes in the World Trade Center. But it is saying that maybe we should look at the fact that our involvement, our deep involvement in the Middle East, particularly the Iraq War I, led to a lot of disgruntled people who hated America. Now, they might have hated America for other reasons as well, but I really think that we can't dismiss the idea that we did have something to do with engendering this hatred of America. And I think the same thing is true here, that our involvement, our consistent and constant involvement in these countries leads to a real anti-American feeling, and we need to understand that. Now, some people have argued that, well, as Catholics, are we just going to leave Ukraine and not help them? We're not going to do anything about the fact that if Russia invades them, we're just going to leave them alone. Well, I would say a couple of things. First of all, it's not our responsibility to be the world's policeman. So, for example, I have a duty to protect my family at home. If somebody invades my home, I have an obligation and a duty, a responsibility to fight back, to try to protect my family at all, no matter what. However, if somebody is attacking somebody, let's say on the other side of the city or other side of the state or other side of the country, I don't have an obligation to go protect them. It's not something that as a father of my family, I have to go protect them. And so therefore, I don't have that obligation like I would with my own family. And this is true for America with the rest of the world. We don't have an obligation to protect everybody in the world. We just can't do it. Because the truth is often we cause more problems than we solve when we intervene. I mean, one example is did you know there have been 4 coups in Africa this year? One was I just read about today, it just happened, another military coup in an African country. I can't remember now what the country is, but there's 4 different African coups that have happened in the past year. Why didn't we do anything about that? Why haven't we gone in to protect the people? I mean, these are military coups. A lot of times people get killed. Why hasn't America gone in there? Likewise, the Uyghurs in China who are being oppressed. Why don't we go into China and protect them? It's not saying these things aren't terrible. It's just saying we don't do it because it's not really, we don't do it because we're selective in where we decide to help people. Because we're not really trying to help Ukraine. We don't go to Ukraine to protect them, to help them. Although that's a nice feeling and that's sometimes used to try to get support for one of these actions, it's not really why we do it. We do it because we think, we meaning the American government, the State Department, the neocons, think it's in our strategic interest. But we've gotten to the point where our strategic interests are so flimsy that basically we're going to go in everywhere and it just becomes a real problem. And so again, I think what we need to be doing is instead of pushing Russia away, we need to be reaching out to them and trying to find a way not to push them into China's arms. We need, I think, you know, I'm going to finish up here in a minute, but I just think that as Catholics, as conservative Catholics, I think we need to do a few things. We need to reconfigure how we think about these things. First is we cannot assume that if the American government and the American media tells us something about what's going on overseas, that it's true. I think that's the first thing, the most important thing. Do not assume it's true, because we know they lie to us all the time domestically. Why wouldn't they lie to us about foreign affairs internationally? That's the first thing. We cannot assume either that America is always the good guy. That's something that I know developed over the course of especially the Cold War, and there was a lot of truth to it. We were the good guys. And Soviet Union was the bad guys. Not saying everything we did during the Cold War was just and good, but essentially we were fighting for freedom and they were fighting, and the Soviet Union was fighting for dictatorship, totalitarianism, communism, all those different evils. But I think we have to be honest. Are we truly fighting for freedom now? Is it really advancing freedom when America goes to war with another country or it gets involved militarily? If we look at our country, yes, it's the freest one in the world, probably. Well, actually, it's probably not the freest one in the world anymore, but it's a free country in a lot of ways. But I just think we have to sometimes question that assumption as conservative American Catholics, whether or not America's always the good guy in all of these different incursions, different conflicts. And also, I think as pro-life Catholics, I do think we should be for peace. I know that conservative Catholics often think that's just a liberal cause, that it's like this peacenik thing, it's unthinking. But if we're pro-life, we are against war happening. We want to see other ways outside, other ways to resolve conflicts rather than war. And we don't want to create conflict where there shouldn't be any. For example, we shouldn't be engineering coups in other countries, for example. So I think we really should be patriotic. We should love our country, but that doesn't mean we just blindly follow our country no matter what. We don't just blindly say, okay, whatever they say about what's going on in other countries is right, and we just support the expansion of the American empire. I think we have to be much more skeptical of what's being said, and I think much more Catholic in our view of not being so quick to jump on the war bandwagon. And we should be willing to say, okay, let's pull back and say, we don't really need to be involved in these conflicts. We need to step away from this. So ultimately, my position is that we should not be involved in what's going on in Ukraine. We should not be making threats to Russia or anything like that. And I think ultimately, we shouldn't be inviting them into NATO. And in fact, I would even say I think NATO should be disbanded. I don't think NATO serves a real purpose anymore. The Soviet Union does not exist anymore. I don't think there's a purpose served by NATO. So obviously, I don't think Ukraine should be in it if I don't think it should exist. Okay, and I'm sure that this podcast has ruffled some feathers. I'm sure not everybody who's listening agrees with it. It doesn't go along with the crisis history, actually, because Crisis Magazine was very much a neocon magazine in a lot of ways. But, you know, I think we're in a new time. This is not the 1980s anymore. This isn't the Soviet. That's when, I mean, remember, Crisis was founded during the Cold War. So there's obviously a reason for its views back then that the world is very different today. So I think we need to look at these things differently as well. Okay, well, that's it for now. Until next time, everybody, God love you.